Welcome to Random and Memorable, a podcast from 1Password. I'm Matt Davey, 1Password's Chief Experience Officer.
I'm Sarah, one of the founders at 1Password.
I'm Rue, Head of Password Manager Development.
I'm Anna, the producer behind the show.
And we're the hosts behind Random and Memorable. Together, we offer up bi-weekly security advice, interview special guests from the cybersecurity community, and round up the latest security news in Watchtower Weekly. Plus, we may play a silly security game or two. So sit back and enjoy the show. I really enjoyed Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago was a lot of fun.
Why are you guys traveling so much? Why does no one invite me anywhere?
This was the we just listed off the last 3 years of travel, okay? So don't
worry. Legit sitting here asking why I'm not invited.
I'm going to put you right now. I'm going to put you on the list. Like, someone asked me the other day, is there anybody I want to invite to Minneapolis? You're on the list.
There you go.
Okay, I'm busy that day.
She doesn't want to go, Matt. She just wants to be invited.
Okay, I can arrange that.
How fun. I love it.
So, Rue, you had a birthday.
I did.
Finally 30 years old.
Finally 30. That's you, Matthew, not me. Yes, I had a birthday. It was wonderful. For those who are new to the program, my birthday is always a big deal to me, and I took it off.
To everyone else?
Well, I appreciate that. Carrie had coworkers coming up to her and being like, oh, wish your husband a happy birthday. It looks like he had so much fun.
Nice.
People just know. Sawyer, my son, had classmates who said, wish your dad a happy birthday. So, like, it's out there.
I love the fact that you enjoy it so much.
Yeah, I do.
You one-up yourself every year on your birthday, and I think it's great. I'll just eat jelly and ice cream by myself or something. Like, I never plan far enough ahead to do something fun, I think, is my problem.
Yeah.
I'm very much this, like, meh, it's just another day, move on. I think there's something, you know, for the people that like their birthday, and that, like, I love that you go all in on it. Like, it's a huge thing. Like, it could be just any other Tuesday for me, but, like, I love that it's, like, a thing for you. I think it's when people want to celebrate, I think it's great to celebrate with them.
I think you should do a yearly vlog series. I think it could get the similar attention that Somebody Feed Phil has. I don't know whether you've watched that show on Netflix, but he looks at every piece of food like it's the first time he's ever eaten. It's childlike glee, I think it is, the look in his eyes, the energy that he brings. And I think you could do something similar.
Yeah, I probably could.
You have a fancy camera now.
People would just be waiting for Rue's birthday to come out every year. As a television format. Oh, Netflix God. Will pick it up.
It would be fun. Carrie posted something on Facebook where she said, like, I have never met anyone who enjoys their birthday as much as Michael does. He is truly a kid at heart. And it was, like, coupled with pictures of me getting, like, a big box of Lego with this look on my face of just like, woohoo! So, yeah, it was really good.
I love that.
Okay, so I think we should get stuck into some Watchtower Weekly.
I think that's probably a good idea.
Which, if you don't know by now, is where we like to break down some of the latest security news or recent clickbaity headlines and share our thoughts on them. It's also named after 1Password's Watchtower feature, but if you're listening to this and an avid user of 1Password, you are probably well aware of that by now. So, our first news story this week is something that everyone has been talking about, which is the Fed's hack Lockbit. Lockbit springs back. Now what? So this one's by TechCrunch. So days after it was knocked offline by a sweeping, years-in-the-making law enforcement operation, the notorious Russian-based Lockbit ransomware group has returned to the dark web with a new leak site, complete with a number of new victims. In a verbose, borderline rambling statement, the remaining Lockbit administrator blamed its own negligence for last week's disruption. Global law enforcement effort launched an operation that hijacked the ransomware gang's infrastructure by exploiting a vulnerability in Lockbit's public-facing website, including the dark web leak site that the gang used to publish stolen data from its victims. This was called Operation Kronos, and it saw the takedown of 34 servers across Europe, the UK and the US, the seizure of more than over 200 cryptocurrency wallets, and the arrests of two alleged Lockbit members in Poland and Ukraine. Just 5 days on, Lockbit announced that its operations had resumed, claiming to have restored from backups unaffected by the government takedown. In its statement, Lockbit's administrator threatened to retaliate by saying it would target the government sector. A spokesperson for the National Crime Agency, which led the Operation Kronos, told TechCrunch prior to Lockbit's returns that its takedown operation successfully infiltrated and took control of Lockbit systems and was able to compromise their entire criminal operation. Their systems have now been destroyed by the NCA, and it's our assessment that Lockbit remains completely compromised. So, it's a battle of words, I think. Law enforcement claiming overwhelming victory, while the apparent Lockbit ringleader remains at large, threatening retaliation and targeting new victims, puts the two at odds there. With more than a dozen new victims claimed since its relaunch, Lockbit's demise might have been overstated. As the cat-and-mouse game between the government and the criminals rolls on, so does the fighting talk and bold claims from both sides, while the NCA has promised a big reveal of the gang's long-standing leader, who goes by the name of Lockbit Sup. The agencies disclosed little about the administrator in a recent post to Lockbit's own compromised dark website. We know who he is, we know where he lives, we know how much he is worth. Lockbit Sup has engaged with law enforcement, the vaguely worded NCA message read. So, yeah, this is a very weird one. There's a lot more about both Lockbit Sup, which I think is like a one on my, you know, criminal gang naming system.
Agreed.
I legit wonder if they were like, Lockbit Sup, this is Lockbit Sus, come in. Like, I'm picturing some sort of weird old walkie-talkie situation. Like, it's just not working for me. I feel like that, was it a Doritos commercial? What's the one with the, I'm not going to do the what's up thing. What's that commercial?
Oh, it was Budweiser. No, wasn't it?
Budweiser.
Was it? Yeah, it was Budweiser.
Yeah,
it was Budweiser.
Like, that's what I'm picturing. You know? Lockbit Sup. Like, okay, yeah. You know, like, it's just not.
I think you pitched that exactly the right level. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
I find it very interesting that like, one side is hailing the takedown, and then it was hours before they were back up again. Yeah. I mean, it was a public-facing website, so it could literally be, you know, they slung up some HTML and CSS to gain face again, but it really does look like this was a failed attempt that is being hailed as a massive success.
WordPress template?
Yes. So, the next one, new hack cloned fingerprints just by listening to fingers swipe screens. What? What? Those
what?
Are all words, but I don't think they go together.
I need to know more, Matt. I need to know more. What on earth am I hearing right now?
I don't care for this.
Oh, okay. I said it wrong, I think is the main problem. So a new hack clones fingerprints by just listening to the fingers swipe across screens. I mean, I immediately want to just make that noise down a window where it's...
I like that we all did it. That's
yeah.
Good.
So researchers have figured out how to recreate a person's fingerprints just by the technology is amazing, isn't it? Like soon mm-hmm. you'll be able to create a full clone of someone just as they farted and walked out of the room. Like it'll be absolute magic.
Absolute magic is how you describe that. Oh Lord.
You'll be able to clone a person just by having them fart and walk out of a room.
Oh no.
That's brilliant, Matt. That might be the best thing you've ever said.
The discovery has been made by a team from the US and China who could have been using their time for something better. No, it doesn't say that. Researchers have found out how to recreate a person's fingerprints just by the sound they make swiping a touchscreen. The discovery made by a team from the US and China could have made profound implications for biometric security systems that are used in everything from smartphones to door access locks. The technique is called Print Listener, and it reconstructs the patterns of a finger's papillary lines through the acoustic signals it generates as it slides across a screen. Hackers could use the microphone found within the smartphone to record the sound, steal a victim's fingerprint, recreate it. This is according to researchers. Nothing has been done about this at the moment. You don't need to oil your fingers ready to use on the screen as a security deterrent. Due to its widespread use, fingerprint leakage may cause sensitive information theft, enormous economic and personal losses. Wow, they really hyped this up for their launch of this security paper, didn't they? And even a compromise of national security, the researchers have noted in the paper detailing their findings. The attack scenario of Print Listener is extensive and covert. It only needs to record the user's fingertip friction sound and can be launched by leveraging a large number of social media platforms. Using Print Listener in realistic scenarios, the researchers were able to achieve a partial reconstruction of a person's fingerprint 27.9% of the time.
That's not a lot.
27.9%. And a full reconstruction 9.3% of the time.
I legit, I'm like, all my alarm bells are going off because like this whole 27.9%. Show me your statistical analysis on this one. I really want to read like the paper on this. And it just does not sound like anyone who's ever actually used a phone. Like, when's the last time you used your finger? And like legit, like the only time I remember ever actually putting my finger on something is when I was creating my Touch ID print. Other than that, it's like the side of a thumb, maybe right up by the fingernail. Like, there's no fingerprint on that phone. Like, this is bananas. This is like, we have science. Let's scare the crap out of people. Like, this is bizarre. I mean, good on
you,
but...
You use the side of your finger on your phone? I'm fascinated by this now.
What do you mean? Like, you point your Peter pointer and then you just slide towards you. Like, the fingerprint is pointing to you as you pull it towards you. Like, you hold it down and, like, what do you mean? Am I doing it wrong? Have I been interneting wrong all this time?
No, you're fine. It's okay.
Mine doesn't make a noise, though. That's the weird thing. Like, I put my finger on my phone, and I definitely put the fat, podgy fingerprint, like, splat, flat on the screen.
I do not. I just use, like, the
really
side of my thumb.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's the northeast quadrant of my thumb.
The northeast quadrant of my thumb.
If we need a show title.
Anyway. Experts say the best countermeasure to preventing fingerprints being stolen is to use your nose on your phone instead of your finger.
Oh, I had a mouthful of tea just then. That was real touch and go.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so this next one, Avast have been fined $16.5 million for privacy software that actually sold users' data. This one's from The Verge, and this one actually caught me by surprise, unlike many of the others we read out. This is pretty disgusting, because Avast is a cybersecurity company, and they are facing a $16.5 million fine because they were caught storing and selling customers' information without their consent. The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, announced the fine in recent weeks and said that it is banning Avast from selling user data for advertising purposes. From at least 2014 to 2020, Avast harvested user web browsing information through its antivirus software and browser extension, according to the FTC's complaint. This allowed it to collect data on religious beliefs, health concerns, political views, locations, financial status. The company then stored this information indefinitely and sold it to over 100 third parties without the knowledge of the customers. Like, this is ridiculous.
This is real bad.
Avast is also used in businesses. So, like, this could not be the personal opinion. Like, this could be insider all kinds of information as well, which is absolutely bonkers. I can understand why the industry is reeling from this. A joint investigation from Motherboard and PC Mag first brought attention to Avast's data privacy practices in 2020. Avast shut down its data harvesting arm called Jumpshot shortly after the reports emerged. Although Avast has said it removed identifying information before selling user data, the FTC found it failed to sufficiently anonymize customers' browsing information. Instead, it sold data with unique identifiers for each browser, revealing websites visited, timestamps, type of device, browser used, and location. The FTC claims that Avast deceived users by saying its software would help eliminate tracking on the web when it actually did the tracking itself. In addition to the $16.5 million fine, the FTC proposed order prevents Avast from misrepresenting what it does with the data it collects. It must stop selling or licensing any browser data from Avast products to advertisers, as well as delete all of the web browsing data obtained by JumpShot. Avast is also required to notify affected customers that their data has been sold without their knowledge. The Avast spokesperson said, "We are committed to our mission of protecting and empowering people's digital lives."
Yes, of course. Yep.
They said, "While we disagree with the FTC's allegations and characterization of the facts, we are pleased to resolve this matter and look forward to continuing to serve our millions of customers around the world."
Sure.
I feel like I need to wash my hands after that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it hits like a story where it's like, okay, we did it wrong again, or our bad. But this is like legit, like, we're supposed to be doing this. We told you we weren't going to do this. But, you know, it wasn't us. It was this separate app that we wrote. And now we're selling stuff. And, like, it's okay, though. Like, I think while they might disagree with the allegations and characterization of facts, I have to feel like they'd got off easy with $16.5 million. Like, that seems like, I bet you they made some serious bank on all that information with over 100 agencies. Like, this isn't fun.
Just the fact that they used antivirus cybersecurity software to track web browsing information.
Yeah, not great. All right, let's move on to my guest interview this week, where podcast worlds collide as I got to sit down with the hosts behind the Mac Admins podcast. It was a lot of fun to sit down and nerd out with Charles and Tom and Marcus about all things Apple and learn about the quick wins we can all do when using our Apple devices to keep them safe and secure. It was also great to hear their thoughts on passkeys and where Apple is going with some of their new privacy and security features. So with all that being said, I think we can just drop it in here. With me on the show today are some of the hosts behind the Mac Admins podcast. I'm joined by Charles, Tom, and Marcus, who are just some of the rotating panel of Mac admins and consultants on the podcast, providing a dynamic perspective on the latest news, challenges, and innovations in the world of Mac admin and Apple device management. I'm keen to pick their brains today about Mac security and innovations, and hopefully get some of their favorite privacy tips, too. Welcome to the show, folks. How is everyone?
Fabulous.
Pretty fantastic. Thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's nice to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. All right, why don't we start with a little bit of background? How did you all meet, and how did you decide to start doing a podcast?
Well, this one's all Charles's fault, and it's actually just been 8 years since we launched the podcast. It was 8 years ago this past February where Charles cornered me in a bar in London when we were all there for a conference. He was like, "We should do a podcast." And I was like, "Okay, that sounds like great fun." And then, you know, we managed to convince Marcus to come along for the ride. And we had a couple of other people that have participated early on and have come and gone and waned and waxed as time has gone on. But, you know, that is how we got started.
Interesting story. I'd met Charles before we started the podcast. I had not met Tom physically in person until, I think it was like three years after we started the podcast. Once again, at a conference, we were doing a live recording at the Jamf Nation User Conference. And so beforehand, I got to actually meet Tom and Emily, who also records a podcast with us regularly. But Papine, one of the original podcast hosts, I have never met.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I still suspect Papine is not real.
And so 8 years, you're now 350 plus episodes in. Like, that's...
Yeah.
It's no slouch. That's pretty great.
Thank you. I was going to say it's a testament to habits. I just know where I'm going to spend most of my Sunday evenings, which is to say in front of this microphone.
Very cool. So. Very cool. All right. Well, let's get into our first question here. A lot of people out there believe that just buying an Apple product or a device keeps them secure and safe from viruses. And they don't need to do anything else. And I think that for a long time, this was true. Is that a misconception these days, or does that advice still hold?
I'll tackle the latter first. It was never true.
Ooh.
The first viruses were written, or the first viruses for personal computers, at least, were written for the Mac. So I don't think it was ever true. Having said that, I do think Apple makes a lot of privacy and security decisions on our behalf out of the box that make the platform very secure comparably. That's not to say that I don't think third-party products have a place. Take 1Password as an example. Keychain's awesome. 1Password has all these things that make it even better, or at least password management. And the same can be said for EDR, for nearly every product category where there is a actual product category.
Yeah. And, you know, from my perspective, I don't think that there's a ton of need necessarily for you to go out and invest in a, you know, a Carbon Black or a CrowdStrike for your personal individual machine. I don't think that that's a great use of money or time. But, you know, there's some common sense things that you can do to protect yourself in those cases. You know, some of the more consumer friendly solutions are definitely a good option for you as an individual that's kind of out there. But, you know, I was going to say business needs are a little bit different than, say, individual focus.
The other way I like to look at it is the computer itself is pretty safe. It's a pretty robust platform. As Charles mentioned, Apple has done an awesome job of building something that has a level of protection and privacy and makes it really hard for third parties, threat actors to try and do things. But one of the biggest problems is the person using the computer and the behavior that they have. Once again, Apple has done a really awesome job of trying to encourage and promote good behavior, but there are still plenty of things you can get absolutely wrong if you're not sort of mindful of what you're doing. And, you know, so things like 1Password, tools that will look for adware and malware, or, you know, clicking on website notifications and allowing them, but then the website starts popping them up as if they're system notifications, those sorts of things. It's quite amazing to see what sort of paths people attacking Mac users will use compared to the typical Windows virus, which is a whole sort of different kettle of fish. And I think that's the really important thing as well, is understanding that we're not going to be protecting Windows machines if you've got an Apple fleet, and building a strategy around that rather than whatever is working for other devices.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that the external threats coming in are getting more and more sophisticated. You're seeing phishing emails and spoof websites and stuff that used to be laughably terrible that are now like pixel perfect recreations for the real thing that are...
Thank you, AI.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yep.
Just look for 9 fingers and that's the...
Or 12, either way.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So Apple is consistently adding new security features and new privacy features into their products. What has recently come out from Apple that have got you excited as admins or changed the way that maybe you do device management?
I mean, passkeys. We can start there since we're on a podcast from a company that supports them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, passkeys and iCloud keychain. But then I think that, as we pivot into the business for a second, you know, the ability to put those in a managed Apple IDs keychain is absolutely right. And then, you know, if we go one step further in from there, being able to tie the authentication of your managed Apple ID to an external identity provider that isn't just Google or Microsoft, that could be a Jump Cloud, an Okta, or anybody else along those lines. That's a huge step forward for a lot of business organizations in terms of making managed Apple IDs more approachable, more familiar, more comfortable for the average end user of the IT environment, so that they can know, hey, look, I don't have to remember a different password. I don't have to get out an SMS-capable device for me to complete that authentication. To be able to do it through the same way that I normally authenticate to any of the other business tasks that I do is so crucial. And I'm really excited to see Apple moving in that direction and supporting that kind of managed Apple ID federation.
And some of these things are not things that users are asking for. So like just last week, I don't know when this will be released, but last week as of the recording, Apple introduced quantum safe encryption for iMessage as an example.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you don't even need Signal or one of the other apps in order to have that same level of encryption to protect data, whether it's at rest or in transit on that device.
Yeah. While the texts that I exchange with my friends are not exactly something that I'm worried about, the fact that I can be comfortable knowing that for the foreseeable future, any messages I send from, I don't know, next week onward are safe from quantum cryptography attacks, you know, that is a real good feeling. And it wasn't something that I sought out to ask from Apple, but boy, are they out there looking out for the people that use their platforms in ways that other people just aren't.
One of the things that I really love is Apple's idea of containerization. So on your personal device, you can have the work applications, the work functionality there, but rather than having a portal that you go into for work or a different account that you sign into, the apps are all just there on your phone. And you use a work app, work has responsibility for that. Work can see what's going on in there. You're using personal apps on your own phone, work can't see what's going in there. One of the details I really love is that they won't even know the serial number of your device, because that serial number can be used for narrowing down who you are or identifying. So that real idea of giving security, but also privacy alongside with that, understanding that making things secure for an organization and doing a really good job, being able to prevent copy and paste and clipboard between personal and work, but at the same time, giving the user privacy. Because I remember back to the early days of MDM, what you're able to see on somebody's personal device that's enrolled in your MDM, and what may seem like really simple things like the apps that they have installed on an iPad. You can draw conclusions with things like that, and just not even having that available to you, I think, is really refreshing. We see so many organizations saying, oh, we need to be able to do this. We need to be able to geolocate all of our users wherever they are. And most of these ideas come from a good place. They're thinking about the value that they can have. But then you think about what happens if somebody with either bad intentions or sloppy digital hygiene gets access to that information. And next thing you know, you're in the news. And next thing you know, as a user, something very personal of yours is now not.
Yep.
And you can't walk that back. So I love the way Apple makes decisions on behalf of systems administrators, on Mac admins, about what they can and can't do, really to protect us from ourselves in a way.
I want to double click on a piece of that for a minute. What do you think is the perception of Apple devices in corporate environments these days? There was certainly a time where Apple was pushing out ad campaigns of like, oh, you can do that on a Mac too. Like the Mac does Microsoft Office and things like that. But there's obviously like there's a lot more than just running Office to bring a Mac into a corporate environment. And you mentioned managed Apple IDs. You've mentioned this containerization. First of all, what is the perception these days? And two, like, do you see it shifting?
Oh, I see it shifting. And, you know, I think that it's shifted a lot over the last 5 years. If we think about how businesses have traditionally seen Apple in the before times, in the long ago, you know, we certainly saw the Apple devices as less than. And a lot of corporate IT departments were like, oh, that one Mac over there that I was made to support by my evil boss, who was just like, just please go support this.
And support is in air quotes.
Oh, support is in air quotes, yeah. Right? Like, there wasn't a lot of knowledge there. And I think that
tolerate is probably
there was
even too strong a word.
Oh, agreed. If you want to put one person's name, and I don't like putting one person's name because there was a whole team that was working with this person to make that a reality. But like, go look at what Fletcher Previn's reputation is. He was at one point CIO of IBM. He's now, I guess, CIO of Cisco. And, you know, you look at the programs that he helped build there in terms of saying, hey, it's okay to use a Mac at work. In fact, it's probably better for you if you do. Or if you want to use a Mac, you should be able to. And that approach has paid such dividends for IBM, for Cisco, for other organizations throughout the Fortune 500, that there isn't anybody without some kind of plan for supporting Macs in the enterprise. And I go back to the anything you can do, I can do better. And I'll resist, you know, breaking into song.
Oh, come on, Tom.
No, I'm not going to do it. But, you know, maybe another time. I wasn't rehearsed. But, you know, when we think about the strength of the platform, it gives people the tools they want to use at work. Period. Full stop.
Yeah. The one thing I would add to that, I do see an almost overcorrection in some organizations who maybe see a Fletcher Previn presentation or something of that nature, and they just equate the Mac with quote-unquote digital transformation buzzword. And it's like, well, if we allow, 1,000 Macs here, then we have completed the digital transformation. And in my experience, digital transformation is about automation, cost-cutting, getting to market faster with new product development. And just allowing a Mac and treating it like Windows is not synonymous with digital transformation, unless you're looking to do those other things and to automate things and get things to market faster. There is some cost reduction there, but that kind of augmenting human intellect going back to the 1950s is really, to me, what that digital transformation piece is, not this is the type of computer that we're allowing.
It's more let people use the type of computer that works for them and makes them more productive and more comfortable. And for a whole bunch of people, that's not going to be a Mac. There'll be the group of Linux on the desktop people over in the corner. And if that works for them, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's transition a little bit and talk about the cybersecurity landscape. We started here a little bit at the beginning, but the cybersecurity landscape constantly evolving. How do you stay informed about emerging threats, vulnerabilities that are specific to Apple products? What steps can Mac admins and users take to stay ahead of these potential security risks?
I mean, I can speak to what I do. And a lot of that is I watch every video from Objective by the Sea. It's a wonderful conference that talks in depth. And that might be too in depth for the average user. I also typically look for everything about iOS, Mac, iPad, Vision OS, passkeys even, that pops up at DEF CON, Black Hat, etc. Again, that's pretty deep for regular people who are just trying to protect their machine at home.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, I'm a little bit of an outlier too, because, you know, my next door neighbor is one of the program managers for CISA, which is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency here in Washington, D.C. And so I just go across the fence and ask Dave what happened.
Why was AT&T down, Dave?
And so I cheat.
If Dave's not there, you know something really bad happened.
But I think really what I do is I read a lot of things. I will call out Objective-C Foundation. As Charles mentioned, they have a conference, but he also has a Patreon and a blog, and that's a great place to go look. I love the Threat Labs research topics from the folks at Jamf and from Kanji.
And Malwarebytes.
Oh yeah, Thomas Reed is amazing. Matt Benyo, Jaron, and all of those folks from Jamf, Kanji, etc. They're doing great work out there, and that is a great place to go see what the cutting edge of threats is. I also want to caution you. If you read those and you get scared, take a deep breath. It's going to be okay.
A lot of it's theoretical. Or been addressed in a point release or a security update.
Yeah. The number one thing that anybody can do to protect their own security is keep their machine up to date. Period. Full stop. Apple patches the latest version of the operating system for all of the security bugs. And keep your third-party software up to date, too. That is the number one thing that anybody at home can do. Run your updates once in a while. I know that it's fun to click the box that says not now or ask me again tomorrow, but don't get in the habit of doing that for 3.5 years like a couple of people I used to support were allowed to do. Keep your stuff up to date. That's what you got to do.
Keep your software, keep your third-party software up to date. Don't enable sharing. Read the dialog boxes. You know, ask questions like, why do you want access to my photo roll? Right.
There's also some basic digital hygiene you can have on your computer as well. There's this great functionality in Mac OS of auto login. So when you turn on your machine, it just logs in, which is great convenience. It's a really bad way to remember what your user password is, which you're probably going to be prompted for. But it's also it's a really good way to give somebody else access to what's on your machine. If they've got physical access to that machine, then.
Yeah, game over.
All your base belong to them. So, you know, update your machine, make sure you can log in, use a good password manager, use passkeys when you can use them.
Don't reuse the same password. I mean, that's why, right? Primarily.
Yeah.
It's not just that it's easier to share to your friends on Windows.
Another way of looking at it as well is the Objective by the Sea conference is where all of the best who look after security in the Apple world hang out. So if you're reading something and it's either written by them or written by a company they work for, then that's a pretty trusted source. If you're reading something about Mac security and it sounds pretty catastrophic, the sky is falling in, and who it's written by, either they're not prepared to put their name to it, or it's someone that you can't see any other links to them sharing or being part of the Mac security landscape, then maybe approach that article in that way as well. This is somebody from outside trying to make a statement about security in the Apple world. And maybe it is an opinion from outside rather than somebody who actually understands.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. where can folks go to find out more about you, listen to the podcast, join the Slack, you know, add to your 65,000 user bill?
So I was going to say, you can find the podcast. We're very easy to find. It's macadminspodcast.com or podcast.macadmins.org. Can find us and join us in a 65,000 person strong Slack for people who manage Apple devices at scale. Check that out. Read the code of conduct. We've got a code of conduct. We really like to keep it a safe place for people to participate and to be themselves. So please give that a look and come join us, because managing Macs is a lot of fun. And that's not something they put on the tin. So it's something you get to find out through experience.
Be careful of autocorrect or autocarrot, because there are macadamia podcasts out there, whole different industry. I'm sure they love what they do just as much as we do, but might not be what you're looking for.
Fantastic. Well, listen, this was a delightful way to spend an hour. Truly, this was a lot of fun.
Same
for us too.
Yeah, we love it.
Thank you.
And with that, it brings us to our security blank game. And I want to say that I'm relieved this week because I finally get to host. But then I read the pre-show notes and I'm like, I think I've nailed this week. So I'm not as excited because I think this was my chance. This was my chance for redemption. And instead, it's easy week. It's straight A's, everyone. I'm going to be highly disappointed. But at the very least, we get to hear the jingle again. So I'd like to drop that in.
Did you hear me bring Security Blank to another show this week, Sarah?
I heard of it. I did not hear the show, though. Did you crush it?
I was hosting. I was one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to all the time. I was like, I want to go see if I can be on their show. And so I reached out. I was like, hey, do you want to play a game? Like, I'll host a game. And I hosted Security Blank for them. And it was good. It worked out well.
Nice. I love that. Well, but if you're turning in for the first time, the rules of the game are very straightforward. I'm going to read out some recent security news headlines with one or two words blanked out, and Matt and Rue have to guess which words are missing from the headline. I'm going to give them multiple choice answers, but they're welcome to shout out any answer that they feel along the line. So here we go. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. From the Register, February 2024, election security threats in 2024 range from AI to blank. Is it A, Gen Z on TikTok, B, Smell-O-Vision, C, Anthrax, D, Voter ID, or Twitter, also known as X? Election security threats. What do we feel?
It's not voter ID. It's just not. Like, that is not the thing that is threatening election security. So we know it's not that. It is probably not anthrax. Or Smell-O-Vision. So it's got to be either Gen Z on TikTok or Twitter. And really, I think it's Twitter.
Wouldn't it be pretty boring if the range of security threats were AI to Twitter?
Yeah, it would be boring. But I also think that that's what it is. Oh, what the hell? Let's go anthrax. We're just
going
to do
I'm
it.
I'm going anthrax.
Yeah. I love it.
Like, it's, you know, A to A, first of all, you know. With my headline writing hat.
All about alliteration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And second of all, what's the, you know, biggest threat? AI? Bit of anthrax. What about anthrax with AI?
Oh, don't let AI get its hands on anthrax.
That's a big security threat in 2024, I feel.
So I'm just going to go on a limb here and say I also said anthrax. And so you'd all be pleased to know that I was right, which means you guys are right, which is
amazing.
Very surprising.
I love
We're
this.
All shocked by this.
I love this bitter hosting.
I'm just saying, this game really has me in the
Look,
moment.
I would have got it right, okay?
Rue jumped Here. Ship last minute and got it right. So we're going to give it to him, even though it was a jumping ship moment. But we're going to give it to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, what were you going to say? Twitter.
I was going to go Twitter. And then, but then I switched to anthrax before you said anthrax. So it's okay. I talked myself into the right answer. It's fine.
Okay.
Listen to the consternation.
I won that one more.
He is. Okay, you got one and a half, and he's got one. How does that?
I'm sorry. I'm not doing half points.
All right. From Fortune, also from this month, February, cyber attacks are the number one worry for business leaders and blank, 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 blank. So, cyber attacks are the number one worry for business leaders, and is it A, first world problems, B, they're too scared to take a vacation, is it C, AI may be able to help, or is it D, and they can't sleep at night?
I enjoy the too scared to take a vacation.
Yeah. Yep. Coupled with other first world problems is really good.
It is coming from Fortune, so, you know, I don't know if that helps angle your answers.
It does, actually.
Does it?
Because I feel like all Fortune write about these days is AI.
Is AI. Yep. Yeah. It's going to be C.
Oh, so you're following me again? Okay.
Nope. I had already arrived at AI.
Not sure that's true.
You just spoke first. That's all.
Okay. So here's the good news. You're both right. I was right as well. Just, you know, pre-show. I did do the pre-show. I like legit wrote it down and sent it to Anna. I have proof.
Okay.
I was hoping there by saying the Fortune magazine, I was going to like throw you off the scent. And instead it like.
You're trying to nudge us into first world problems?
It like legit went like straight to like, oh, yeah, no, this is the obvious answer. Thanks for helping us, Sarah. So you're welcome. All right, back to the register. Apple promises to protect iMessage chats from blankety blank. A, Bitcoin scams. B, quantum computers. C, online trolls. Or D, government backdoors.
Okay, this one's actually very easy because I've been following the news on this one. It's B, it's quantum computers.
Really?
Yes.
Weren't they just worried about like some rando guy making an Android app for iMessage? Isn't that like the biggest threat that they thought about?
If I now get this wrong, I will look proper foolish, and that's okay. But it's quantum computers.
It's the only one that makes sense, I think. I mean, Apple aren't going to promise to protect iMessage from Bitcoin scams because like anybody can send them, right?
Correct.
That's a wild promise to make. It's not going to promise against government backdoors because that's not a promise that they can make. I think B is the only one that they can actually make a promise, and I think you're right. I think it's B.
Okay, so that's a solid, like, Rue gets it and you get kind of it. Like, we're going to be tied after this if you're right, based on what happened with the number one.
The whole, like, half a point, 0.25 of a point, like, you know, Anna's going to have a problem with this.
I'm okay with that. That's, you know, you put me in charge of judging. It's going to happen. Congratulations. And you guys are both correct. Yay. Right. Cheers all around. All right. This one I like was so excited. I was like, I have an article tied to this. I know the answer. So I'm looking forward to seeing you both totally know what the answer is too, and put me to shame for even thinking I knew what I was doing. All right. Wired, February 2024. A blank error revealed secret face recognition technology. Is it a TikTok filter error, a trending eyewear app, a smart teddy bear, or a vending machine?
Oh, I think I read this one.
Okay, so I'm gonna lock in an answer before you say, because if you know, Matt, like, I don't want to be swayed. I want the answer to be smart teddy bear so badly that I'm locking in C.
I read this. It was the University of Waterloo, I believe. And it was a vending machine.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Matt is correct.
Oh, how about that?
It was indeed, it was the University of Waterloo. That's why I know. Like, it's just up the street. So it was local news here. There is a vending machine and it was pulling up an error code. The argument was that the vending machines were turning on to see the people as they walk by to recognize, you know, oh, there's a human, show an ad. And it was facial recognition technology within that, where they're like, show her the picture of the Oreos, not the chips. You know, that's what she's after right now. And so supposedly that's not what it is. I want to say they're Swedish vending machines. But on that note, I'm totally calling shenanigans right now, because our next story here is from the Register from February. And it says, cops turn Lockbit's ransomware gangs blank blank against them. Is it their own families, countdown timers, payment demands, or their own website?
Turns their own families against them. Can we just appreciate that Anna went super dark on that answer?
Yes. It's a crime family. Some things happen.
Oh my goodness. Netflix drama about that coming out soon. Hang on, we read this one. I read this one out loud.
Yeah, I know. We had to scroll. I had to scroll up.
No scrolling up. No scrolling up.
It's C or D, but I can't remember. It was like 20. It was. It was like 20 minutes ago.
I know. That's why I'm calling shenanigans.
I think it's payment demands.
Okay,
It's payment demands.
Oh, the frustrating thing is I can't remember from like 20 minutes ago, but I can remember about a vending machine that was in a university in a country that I don't live in having smart recognition tech.
Well, I can remember that it was Lockbits Up. So, you know, maybe they did go with their own families, turning them against them, because who comes up with a name like that? It could be anything here.
It was C or D. I think it was C. I think it's payment demands. How am I doing on score?
You're ahead.
Ah, I'm one ahead, though. So I've got to get this one right.
Of Sarah and me.
Sarah's
which
got the answers.
Doesn't even count. Listen, I didn't look at the answers before I answered. I did not cheat. So you're going to go with C? And
I'm also
you're
going
to go with?
Well, okay, so no, I got to change it then, because I think it is C, but I got to change it just to have a chance of tying, I guess. So yeah, I'll go own families.
I really want to scroll up.
I'm going to say A. I will go own families.
Okay, so you said A, own families. Matt, you said C, payment demands.
Yeah, because it's definitely not their own families.
I said D, their own website. Congratulations to all of us. We suck. It's B, countdown timers.
What?
What?
Well, okay.
Countdown timers.
They use their countdown timers.
I gotta look
I have
up
to
this.
Assume there's some sort of malicious code. I don't know. Scroll up. It's there. Operation Kronos. If we'd remembered Kronos, that's time related. We should have known that.
Gang's countdown timers against them. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty blatant out there.
So the good news is Matt's won.
So Matt wins and Sarah and I tied for second.
I didn't end with zero. And that's what I'm going with as the true win here. Even though I had to host and the shenanigans and I should have had the opportunity to like not suck horribly. Like usual, you know, I'm gonna be a very bitter host. I don't know if they're not calling me anytime for The Price is Right. I'll tell you that.
Oh, it's too good. All right. Well,
I tell you,
we did it. Another one in the bag.
We had fun.
We did it.
We had fun.
We had a good time.
How many of these have we done? 1,230? That's a lot.
I'm sure it only feels like that since I joined.
Have we actually done 123 of these?
I think this is 123, yeah.
That's bonkers.
I gotta get out of here. This is fun.
Okay. Love you guys.
Love you both.
Hang on. What? We gotta stop. Stupid if it erased everything.
If it erases
right?
Everything,
stupid.
You are in so much trouble right now if you erase everything.
That is very true.
Because that was an amazing episode.
It was.
It was real good.
You're in so much trouble right now, Matt.
It's fine.
I have a slight panic about it.
It's fine. Bye-bye.
Ru's like, I'm leaving. Get out of here.
I love the fact that if our recording is just like, bye-bye.
Love you. Bye-bye. It's great.
Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right. Love you, bye.
Bye-bye.
Now stop it.
Now stop. Okay.
Now stop.